Hello and welcome to Behind the Journey. On this show, I speak to Sean Spooner about all things business. Hello guys and welcome to another episode. This one for me is going to be one of my favorite episodes and for so many different reasons. I bring on to the show Sean Spooner. Me and Spooner have been friends for a very, very long time. I don't even know when we met. I can't remember. But it's been one of those people that's been on the journey with me the whole way through. And if any of you are out there, you know, young entrepreneur, you'll find that many of your kind of close friendship circles when you're getting kind of, when you're coming through the ranks, they just don't understand what it's like to be a business person. Sean's been one of those people that I've been able to turn to when I've ever had a difficult challenge or ever had a question regarding business things. I also do a podcast with Spooner and Adam Horton called Undeveloped Thought, which is always a great chat and a great bit of banter. So welcome to the show, Spooner.
Hello, it's good to be here. It's weird to have this formality of recording a conversation, but nonetheless, it's going to be fun.
I think it's even funnier whenever we speak, is because we always like chin wag for about half an hour beforehand about life. And then it's like, oh shit, we got this podcast we've got to do now. It's, let's try and be serious. We actually had a really interesting chat just then actually before. And I think we actually should probably do that for another conversation for another day. Because I think what we were discussing there, just for everyone listening, we were discussing vaccines, side effects, and mental health, etc., which I think is probably going to be a topic for another day. I want to use this podcast really as a way for you to be introduced to Spooner, understand what he's about, and go from there really. Spooner, let's go right to the start, mate. Let's go right back. And you know, you know that I'm like with podcasts, I always talk longer than I should. So I want to just pass you the microphone and just watch you do your thing. Tell me about your first business. Tell me about your upbringing. Give everyone a bit of an insight of who Sean Spooner is.
So I've got this down to a T now. I've done so many podcasts that I can almost refine 10 years of my life into about 2 minutes. So let me try and do that. So I was never very academic in school, didn't really listen in lessons, could never see the end point of why I was learning about like longshore drift and Bunsen burners and how to play cricket, right? It just made no sense to me. But one subject that I really was interested in was business. And there I was sat at the front of the business class, putting my hand up, trying to answer every question, just being like the business teacher's pet. And next to me was a guy called Lewis Porter. And we very quickly realized that we had a lot in common, in as much as we both liked business. We both didn't like school, but we were in school, so we may as well have made something of it. And so we decided that we wanted to start a business together. And so after a few weeks of umming and ahhing about what that business should be, because we did it completely the wrong way around, we decided we wanted to start a business, then work from there. We both realized that we kind of backed our town. So the school I went to was a split between people from Corby and then people from like Kettering and all the surrounding villages. And at the time, Corby had a stereotype of being a shithole, frankly, because at the time it was. But there was lots of regeneration going on. And so we wanted to shout about the good story of Corby and decided to make a magazine all about it. And so there we were, two 14-year-old kids, walking to local businesses, trying to get advertisers to tell them that we were going to create and print a magazine and that they should give us their money and trust us to do so. And remarkably, we did it. We published 8 printed editions over 2 years. We met a guy called Ian, who was very good at PR. So he built this story around us being the world's youngest publishers. It turned into this huge news story. National news, international news, just a bit crazy. So we accidentally became these like figureheads of young entrepreneurship. But then Lewis moved to London just after his GCSEs. And so I was stuck in this small town without a business partner, without a business, but with a desire to do something. And so, as I say, almost every week now, these exact words, I did what any lost and confused young entrepreneur would do. And I went on to the BBC's Young Apprentice. Very long story short, spent 2 weeks on there having just ran a publishing business, got fired by Alan Sugar on a publishing task. And so I went on to do the next logical thing, which was start another publishing business. That time around, it was called Magnate. It was essentially the Corby magazine business model taken. We put steroids into it. We put it in London. We just made it bigger. And we ran that in print for 3 issues, interviewed the likes of Sir Richard Branson, Boris Johnson, a few other big names. Got some really good advertisers. It was around that time that I realized that I was better at creating hype than I was actually doing the work. And so that was the early inklings of me realizing that I quite liked this marketing thing and I quite liked working with the advertisers from Magnate. As Magnate was drawing to a close, it just kind of fizzled out because it was a very hard industry to be in, particularly in the capital city. I was speaking to a guy called Richard. He and I were passing each other freelance work. I got introduced to a third guy called Alex. Alex is an incredible developer. Richard is a big people person. And I was okay at copywriting. I was okay at design at the time. So we realized after about a year or two that we had the bare bones of an agency. That agency turned into a business called Dream. We started really cracking at it formally maybe 4 years ago. And then this time last year, for a very long story, we rebranded to Patter. And here we are now.
I think the most amazing thing with all that story for me, if anyone listening kind of at home, is that you've essentially failed so many times. And the thing that I love about failure is you can always see, and I always believe this, you can always see the people who are successful at what they do when they are so happy and open to discuss their failure. And what I mean by that is I know so many people that will always try and hide their failure. But that's because I don't believe they've got to the place of success just yet. So when you're sat there, you're proudly discussing your moments of failure, because you know that you're on the right path, you're doing the right thing, making the right impacts. One of the things I love about you most, Spooner, is the fact that you always have these secret nuggets of knowledge. And, you know, like even before when we were talking before this podcast, you kind of brought out this phrase, I can't remember what it is now because my memory is so bad, but you bring out these little phrases and I'm like, okay, Spooner knows his stuff. And what I want to go back to really is, you know, during all of this process of starting these businesses at a young age, going on The Apprentice, et cetera, when did you really realize that you kind of wanted to learn more, know more, research more, et cetera?
So it's really interesting that you seemingly accidentally connected those two points because they are so related, you wouldn't believe. From the point onwards where we were like on national TV with, what was it called? Corby Magazine, forgot the name of my own business there, through to being on The Young Apprentice. And then you inevitably get interest from like talks. Actually, that's how we met, isn't it? I did a talk for you. I was trying to build myself up to be this kind of business guy, this young entrepreneur, doing talks, tweeting, doing everything I could to try and get attention. But behind the scenes, I was never really progressing. Like on paper, the businesses look good, right? Big names, big claims, but they weren't actually, I mean, let's start here. They weren't profitable. So in a sense, they weren't businesses, right? And I had this kind of quarter life crisis around my 21st birthday, where I realized that actually I was going down this very dangerous path. And it's a path that many others have continued down since I took a left turn, which is I was going down this path of trying to be the end result. We always speak about this, but trying to be the end result without putting in the work. And there was no easy way out of that path other than to just shut the fuck up and become the real deal. And so I didn't say a word for about 3 years. It was about 2 years ago now that I maybe made my first IGTV video, which kind of led on to my podcast and so on. But there was a 3 year period where I was just silent. I was heads down. I was trying to learn as much as I could. I was trying to learn who I was as a person. And I'm still on that journey, but I'm getting some way there. And I was trying to build a real business. And I said to myself, and I actually stuck to this commitment, I said, I will not book another talk anywhere. It doesn't matter how big, how small. That was my barometer, the public speaking. I will not book another one until I feel like I have something to say. And having something to say was, of course, a byproduct of all of the learning that I had to go on. I think it was February last year was the next talk I did after the kind of cutoff point all those years back. So it was a long process. And that was just the beginning. But yeah, I think it's one of those ones where, though I didn't learn much in school, I kind of went to the top of the ego mountain and had all this press coverage and all this stuff, and then almost had an identity crisis where I'm like, who the fuck actually am I? What do I know and what do I do? Because I couldn't answer that question. And so that's kind of what spurred me on to go and learn stuff so that I could learn who I was, what I can do, and also just as importantly, what I can't do.
I love what you're saying there. I think that every single young business owner, or the majority of young business owners, right at the start believe they have to pretend they're something to become a successful, this whole fake it till you make it thing. I think many people lose themselves along the way, which is why having connections like yourself, et cetera, and like mates like you in Horton, et cetera, are perfect to have. There's a business owner, I won't name their name, you probably will know who it is when I mention the scenario I'm about to mention. she's gone from amazing success pretty much overnight. And she put tweets out and Instagram posts out the other day saying she's lost who she is. She doesn't know who she is anymore. She feels like she's got anxiety, la, la, la. And I feel that the reason that that's happened to her is the same path that we've all been on, right? I started business when I was 16. You started when I was 16. We had these realizations at 20, 21. I had mine about 18 or 19. Everyone has these realizations. She's having hers now in the public domain because she's had such rapid growth and learnings. We all go through it. And we all go through the point where you go, actually, I don't have to take screenshots of bank balances. I don't have to wear that flash watch. I don't have to do this stupid thing. I don't have to hype on TV when I've got nothing. You don't have to do any of this stuff. The real win, the real success is you don't have to say anything. You have to say anything. The real success is when people come to you naturally and say, how did you do that? Where do I learn that? And that's the real win. And I think many of us, and what you said there, we all thought the win was going viral in the newspaper about being the youngest publisher. We all thought the real win was being on The Young Apprentice. You know, I purposely don't mention The Young Apprentice when it comes to you. I purposely don't mention it because you're so much more than just being on The Young Apprentice. Do you know what I'm saying? And I feel like I've always thought, I was thinking something the other day about The Apprentice. Oh, Pete, would you ever go on The Apprentice? And I said, I'm so glad I never went on The Apprentice. I applied. I'm so glad I never got on The Apprentice because the first thing you have to do is unconnect yourself from the Apprentice. Do you see what I'm saying? Like that's what you've had to do. You've really gone full circle. You've gone from thinking The Young Apprentice was going to make you to now I can see it in your fucking eyes. The first thing you try to do is connect yourself from it.
It's an interesting one about, I guess your whole piece there is almost redefining what success is, because I had a nice full circle the other day. I was in Manchester for a few days over the weekend. And although we've known each other on Twitter for years, I met with Catty, the creative director of Social Chain over in the US. He was part of the founding team. So he's been there since day dot. And, you know, we were sharing notes coming from it from such different extremes, right? We're a 5-person business. They're a 130-person business, the agency alone. And then they're huge outside of that in Social Chain Group. And I was saying to him that, you know, I always thought I wanted to build a social chain. I don't think that's true. I think I wanted to, this is back on the kind of identity crisis curve. I think I watched the Stephen Bartlett and the Gary Vaynerchuk vlogs and I thought, well, that looks fun. So I need to try and replicate that. I couldn't think of anything worse than running a 130-person agency now. I'm so happy to build this to like 20 people and it to give me the freedom and the happiness and the space to do what I want. Yes, a bit of money comes along with that, but I think it's so important for everyone in business, but particularly young people in business who, let's face it, we are as a cohort more impressionable, to just really stop and think and spend a lot of time and a lot of thought to understand what is success for you. Because I was trying to borrow someone else's version of success for years. And let me tell you, it's fucking miserable. I've never been happier now. And yet I've also disconnected from the idea that we're ever going to be a 130-person business, because frankly, we're not. And it was nice to almost say that to the face of someone from Social Chain. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I thought that we were trying to build this. We're not. And I'm so fucking okay with that.
I was out with Brad. We're having, I think it was like dinner on like Sunday or whatever it was. And I said essentially the same piece that you just said there, which is, you know, we're about 17, 18, give or take, just distract. And I said pretty much the same thing. I say this a lot. I've said this to you before. You know, I'm happy with this forever. You know, if Distract was this forever now, I would see that as a win. And Daniel Priestley says something really interesting. He tweets it every now and again, something along the lines of, would you rather have a lifestyle business where you don't have to work too hard in it and make $500,000 a year profit? Would you rather have I can't really call it like, you know, a superstar business that makes you $1.5 million a year, but you've got to work pretty much every single day. You've got 200-300 staff. And for me, it's obvious. For me, it's absolutely obvious. You know, the 3x of income at that point really doesn't really make much difference. And the lifestyle time, etc., you're going to get from that is far, far greater. And I'm the same. I remember having, and Bradwell goes, well, I told you that at the start, because he did. I remember right at the start, I said, I want to grow a 200-person agency. I want to grow this thing to be an absolute machine, because we all are idolizing the wrong things at the start. At the start, when we're 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, we're idolizing Bartlett. We're idolizing Vaynerchuk. We're idolizing these big kingpins because they look like they're absolutely smashing it. But really, when you lift up the hood and you go, actually, Don McGregor wants to jump in front of the train, right? Let me get real about it. You actually go hang about here. I haven't wanted to do that. I don't know the people in the same sort of size business I've got. I haven't got the pressure that he had. Maybe I don't want the 200 staff. Maybe I don't want the, you know, all the problems that comes with. So yeah, I completely agree what you're saying there. I think that that's one of the biggest realizations any entrepreneur goes through is, and it's not settling. That's a key thing. Maybe people might think that it's not settling. It's understanding and realizing that actually the great that you thought was great isn't great. The grass isn't always greener. And I think that's a really, really important important thing to lie on. One of the things that I want to talk to you about has been your podcast. And also I've got a question. Are you going to write a book?
I'm so fucking ready to write a book. I'm not actually ready. I've always wanted to write a book and I know exactly how I'm going to do it. When I'm going to do it, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years from now. But yeah, it's going to be a banger of a book when it comes.
The reason I asked that question is because someone jokingly said in the office the other day that when I started a podcast, Spooner started a podcast about a year later.
Yeah.
And they said, after they read your foreword in my book, they said, is he going to write a book next as well?
To be fair, it's not an unfair comparison, in as much as I speak a lot about you needing case studies of people around you to literally copy, as bad as that sounds, right? But you are ahead of the curve compared to me when it comes to everything from a business metric, right? You're also older than me, and you also started this whole like speaking your mind publicly earlier than me. I would be lying if I didn't say that seeing you do it, somebody I know personally, didn't give me the courage and didn't give me a tick in a box to say, yeah, maybe that is a good idea. I can't give you credit for the book one because I've had this book idea in my mind for so long and it's going to be a banger. But yeah, I don't think it's an unfair comparison.
So thanks for stroking the ego. how are you going to write this book? What's going to be so unique about it?
I don't think it'll be unique. So it'll essentially be a near carbon copy, not that I've read it, of Tools of Titans, is it?
I've heard of it. Is it Tim Ferriss?
Yeah. In as much as I feel like outside of business, I'm just a fucking sponge of information. Like the amount of pointless stuff, and not pointless, but like only useful in a particular situation. The amount of stuff that I've soaked up and learned, love listening to podcasts, love reading books, love kind of probing at my own thoughts and trying to connect thoughts and so on. I wish that there was somebody who wrote a book aimed at people in their young 20s, which is almost like a guide of how to get your 20s right. Because nobody talks about that. Mm. Everyone talks about like career success. You don't get that in your 20s. Everyone talks about like starting a family. You generally don't get that in your 20s. Financial advice, well, most of that isn't relevant in your 20s. Some of it, yes, like start investing now and so on. But I almost want to, before my 20s are out, I want to create almost like a handbook to the shit I wish I knew when I was that idiot 21-year-old spending money on credit cards, trying to be Billy Big Balls and actually just flaking my life away.
I do remember seeing you in your early 20s taking all these lavish pictures of you in these nightclubs. And I do, and I don't take this the wrong way, mate, because I didn't know you particularly well back then. And if this was in this scenario now, I would 100% pick the phone up and be like, what the hell are you doing? But I remember seeing pictures of you in a nightclub with these bottles, and I just knew that A, you weren't happy. You tell me if you weren't, but I didn't think you were. A, you weren't happy, and B, I could just tell that you were stretching yourself. Do you know what I mean? You know, you can just get that feeling that someone's like, actually, that bottle you can't quite afford, and I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, for sure. And it's an interesting one because, and this is me and you agree on this point entirely, which is, and we've actually spoken about this, like just purposely not posting stuff for strangers to see on the internet, right? I was doing things that I thought looked impressive. And the audience of people who were receiving those posts and those tweets were actually looking at me and thinking the exact opposite, I assume, from what you've said and from what I've learned since. They were looking at me and thinking, like, not literally what a fucking clown, but the next best thing, right? We all know, because we all know them. We all know when people are overstretching or being disingenuous or inflating numbers or doing any of these things. And yet I was doing many of those things in the hope that I looked like the guy I wanted to be. But actually, you don't get there by trying to look like the guy. You get there by doing fucking work, and that's messy.
I think that when I think always have to go through this process. I think it's just a fact of life. I did it. I know a lot of people have done it. But I believe when at the time you think by doing, and this is quite an interesting point. I think at the time you think what you're doing is going to impress the people you want to impress. But actually it impresses the people you don't want to impress, and it turns away the people that you actually want to impress. Because anyone worth their salt looks at that and goes, I could buy that 1,000 times over. Doesn't impress me. But the person you don't want to impress is like, oh my God, that's amazing. It's like, do you think you were only doing that because you're on The Young Apprentice?
I don't think it was that. I think it was a combination of, and this is interesting because I've never tried to articulate this before. I think it was a combination of things up until like my 18th or 19th birthday, that kind of time, right? So like 14 till 19, where when you're really young and trying to do stuff in business, it's almost like when your three-year-old kid paints you a picture and it's shit. And you say, oh, it's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Everyone was pointing and saying, no, you're doing a really good job. You're amazing. You're doing great. And so there was this like tidal wave of expectation that I felt like was behind me, but I was still like 19. I was still 20. And that means that I just hadn't had the time under tension to become the person that I thought people thought I was. And so I was trying to live through this kind of imagined person that didn't exist. It didn't exist in other people's minds, but I thought it did. And that just leads you to do, I wouldn't say stupid things, because none of it was extreme, right?
Mm-hmm. Like
20-year-olds do dumber shit these days. Like people spend £250 on a t-shirt. That's just madness to me. But nonetheless, I was doing things that were just silly and short-sighted and for the wrong reasons. And I think it's because I felt like I was expected to. I was trying to be successful because I thought other people thought I was. Does that make sense?
No, and I get that. And you actually, your foreword in my book is probably better than the book. but because it you basically summarize what you just said there in the foreword. And I think you can actually read that foreword for free on the Amazon preview thing. So if anyone's listening to this and you want to see the foreword, just go to The Niche Influence and then just hit the preview and read it. It's a fantastic foreword. There's a couple of things I want to discuss regarding, I mean, you know, I really believe over the last 6 to 12 months, you've almost kind of made it your part-time job to speak to interesting people. You know, you spoke to some really interesting people over the last 6 months. Who's been the most interesting and what are the biggest lessons you've learned from those people?
I so badly want to avoid the cliche answer that you know I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. The most interesting was Chris Williamson, but only because he is the guy who has spoken to every interesting person you could possibly imagine. And so in a similar way to what I've been trying to do for the last few years of kind of accumulate knowledge and then splice it together to make it make sense for me, he's been doing that on scale. And so having an hour to sit down with him, having listened to near to 300 of his podcasts and just ask him the questions I've always wanted, very interesting. But to give you a more useful answer, almost every guest I've spoken to, and there haven't been that many so far, right? It's been about 10, but from you to Chris Williamson to Ben Pearson, police interceptor, had PTSD, like a big old mix of people. It's so interesting that the lessons that they share and the lessons I take away from it, hopefully the listeners of the podcast take away from it, are all the same every single time. Like it doesn't matter what you're doing, how old you are, what industry you're in, what you've been through in life. People come out of the same four or five things, which is like live within your means, try and get to know yourself better, treat those around you a bit nicer, like believe in yourself. All of these things are so cliche, but it's no mistake that every single person who has found success in their own right says the same thing. So in theory, like I never need to record a podcast episode again because I know what I'm going to learn. But back to that point I spoke about of having case studies, hearing it firsthand from people, I come away from conversations like this one. I know the second I'm done with this conversation, I'm going to feel buzzing. I come away from those conversations just feeling buzzing because it's so nice, particularly after the year and a half that we've all had, to just connect with someone on a real level and them to just tell you how it is and try and impart onto you like 20, 30, 40 years of knowledge. I can't think of a standout lesson, but it's interesting that all of the lessons are the same every time is what I'd say.
What's your opinion? So how many episodes of your podcast have you done now?
80 as of today, 80.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned from doing your own podcast?
That we don't articulate our thoughts. We spend no time whatsoever. I say we actually fall outside of that because you do a podcast and so do I, but 99.999% of people do not journal and document their thoughts in any sort of meaningful way. And you might be listening to this and thinking, why the fuck would I? Like, I've got to where I am. I'm sat in my car with my house and my wife, and I don't need to do that. But actually, it's not possible to know the upside of doing that until you do it. And it's so interesting that we have the stats out there, but I think it's like tens of thousands of thoughts every day. Think about the last time that you picked out a thought that you had in a fleeting moment and really drilled into it. Why am I thinking this way? What does it mean? Where did this thought come from? What can I learn from this thought? Do I have this thought often, and therefore is there something that I need to address to make me happier or healthier? Or do I need to let go of this thought because it's holding me back? And I was only ever going to do 52 episodes of the podcast. I was going to stop. I was going to do it between the age of 24 and 25. I got to episode like 49, 50. So I was a couple away from giving up. And I was like, there's no fucking way I can let go of this. Like, going back to not documenting my thoughts, going back to not being critical of how I think and trying to learn from myself. Because that's an interesting thing, right? So much of what we see and hear and think each day is non-conscious. And so I believe that everybody has lots of lessons to teach themselves inside of their own heads that they inherently know, if only they were to go looking for them. And we just don't. And so I think I'm basically parroting you, because I know that you say this part a lot, but like, the person who gets the most value from my podcast is me. It gets like a negligible number of listeners, other than guest episodes, they bang, but like sub 100 listeners. And it hasn't grown really since I started. If anything, it's shrunk because people were intrigued for those first few weeks. Do I care? Not at all. Because I get so much value from it that I just can't see myself ever stopping. I don't know when I'll stop, if ever.
I agree. My ex-girlfriend is one of those sort of like spiritual sort of like, you know, and she's absolutely ace, by the way. This isn't a slag. Like, you know, all these spiritual sort of whatevers. And she used to journal like a lot. And she always used to say that it brings a huge amount of value to reflect on the day. She used to do it weekly, or occasionally she'd do it daily, depending on the scenario, whatever she was going through, whatever. But really, she said it was the most benefit thing to her was to journal. Just get a pen and paper at the end of the day and just waffle on there, get your thoughts out, get your mindset out, move on with your day. And she always used to say, Pete, you need to journal. And I said, look, I do journal. My podcast is my journal. My podcast is my journal that I can go back to at any point, and it's online forever. My podcast is the journal where I spit out all the information, all my processing, and I compound my thoughts. I believe when you're a business owner or entrepreneur, you're going to such a fast-paced life. You know, you rarely have long to even make decisions sometimes. There's such fast-paced decisions. And only when you force yourself down to sit down can you actually process that thought. Can you actually understand why you did it? And there's been so many moments on my podcast, which people would have heard listening to this, where I've had a realization at the end of it, where I've gone, shit. I think there was one about my book, I can't remember what it was, where I literally realized a huge deal that made a lot of sense to me. It was about people's perception on you is varying from where they come from, etc. And I never thought about that. I'd never even thought about it. But because I was articulating it to myself on the podcast, it worked out wonders. So I'm a huge, huge fan of journaling or podcasting or whatever you need to do. I also believe that putting yourself out there as a real person does so much for your self-confidence in a way that is bizarre. And what I mean by that is, and I want your opinion on this, when you're so real to the outside world, no one can criticize you. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. There is, and I say this genuinely, this isn't a figure of speech, like there is nothing that people don't already know about me hiding in a closet anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we're having a bad month as a business, the world fucking knows about it because it's published on Spotify. If I'm having a down week or all the stuff that's going on with my family, if that's like challenging me, or if the opposite, if I'm on a high, like people know this stuff. And I'm not sure if this is the point that you were making, but forgive me if not, but it's so empowering when nobody has anything on you because you're just fucking real. And it's literally the antidote I needed to all of that nonsense that I lived through years back, where like I'm just so honest now, good or bad, that I need to spend no time thinking about what other people think about me because I'm electing to give them that information and do with it what they want, right?
Yeah, if you don't like the information I'm giving you, we're never gonna get on in the first place. So let's move on with our lives. I completely agree. There's so many different things that I love about you, Spooner. I love the fact that you have these random nuggets of knowledge. I love the fact that I've seen you develop and transform over the past, God knows, 10 years or whatever now. And I love the fact you're constantly intrigued. I feel like if I ever wanted to know something, maybe it would be a bit of pointless knowledge, but I would still ask you. And even the thing at the start before this podcast about the placebo, you know, I feel better knowing that bit of information. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm like, yeah, that does make sense to me, actually. Yeah, maybe I've been placeboed out of this. You did something about, I think it was about a year ago, and I don't know if you still do this, so forgive me. where you bought another phone for social media. How are you, did you still do that? How did you find it, etc.?
Yeah, so ever since I read Digital Minimalism by Cal Newport, which is a banger of a book, by the way, I have had this on-off relationship with social media. So it's easy for me to say, oh, I need social media because I run a marketing agency, but that's not explicitly true, right? I don't need to be sat on Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat or whatever it might be. So I began just under 2 years ago, I'm losing track of time here, just under 2 years ago by quitting social media for a month just to see what that was like. And it was the most amazing, empowering feeling I've ever felt from something that took such little effort to do. It was literally, this sounds ridiculous, not least because I've never been on a drug, but it felt like what it probably feels like to come off of a drug, like the clarity and sharpness of thought and the kind of background calmness that found its way back into my life was incredible. And so I was completely convinced on the benefits of not using social media too much. Problem is that on day 31, I reintroduced social media, and it has a funny way of making its way back into your life incredibly quickly with all of these dopamine releasing devices that are built by the smartest minds on the planet to keep us hooked. And so very quickly I got hooked again, and I thought, you know what, it's just not working, right? Everything I know about habits, things like environment design, right? If you don't want to eat excess calories, don't put a fucking cake in your fridge. That seems so obvious, but like, it seems really wacky and left field when I say, if you don't want to be glued to social media, maybe take the apps off your phone. And rather than, I think George McGill, another really interesting guy, you should have him on actually, he's crazy. But George McGill, I believe, uninstalls or logs out of social media apps, I've heard, from his phone, but I thought that just sounds long. Like, maybe that's the point, it's supposed to sound long. But what I do is I just offload all of the social media apps from my phone every now and then, so they're on here right now because my screen time isn't too bad, but when it's creeping back in, I'll offload them all, and then that phone will stay at home when I'm out with my family, or it will stay at home when I'm in the office. And it's just one of those environment design things where, like, if it's not there, you can't use it, and if you can't use it, then you're not becoming hooked.
What you're saying is that basically when you see yourself taking the piss out of it, you take out your life, which then I guess by default means you don't take the piss out of it, because you know that if it goes up an hour of screen time, then it's gone.
Yeah, and I still haven't hit the sweet spot with it, because I still think I habitually check apps too much. I know too much is a subjective word, but like, it just doesn't quite feel right yet. I would love to one day, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because I know that we're both very like hyper connected when it comes to like checking messages and so on. I'd love to one day do what Ed Sheeran does, which since 2015, he has not had a phone. Like, you can't phone him, you can't text him, because he doesn't have a fucking phone and he just lives by email. And he spoke maybe a year and a half ago. The extended interview was released. It was for a little clip that they use in the film somewhere, but he released the extended interview, and he spoke about like how he's never been happier, or actually more connected to people who actually care about him since he got rid of his phone. I'm not at that point in life now, obviously, but one day when I don't have to worry about certain things, I would love to just be like, if you need me, okay. Like, this sounds bad, right? But even particular people who phone you all the time, because I'm not a phone call guy, you might be, you're more salesy than me, but like, if you want me to do something, or if you were like, just message me and I'll get back to you when I can, right? I just fucking hate getting phone calls. And so even putting social media to one side, if people would just stop fucking phoning me for a day, I'd be living in bliss.
I love voice notes, man. I hate messaging. I hate texting. I just find it easiest to voice note.
Which is a nice middle ground.
Because like, at least then someone can listen to it. He's like, do not send me in a fucking voice note, Pete. I will not respond to it. But I just love voice noting. I just find it easiest to just chat. Because I just chat shit, really. I'm just like a professional chat shitter. Is that even that word? I don't know. Who knows?
I have this funny thing with voice notes. I always say to Dan, someone I send voice notes to a lot, there could be a thing that could have been a 12-word message, and yet the second I hit that fucking record button, it's
minutes,
and I'm like, where's that come from?
I'm putting in words that don't even exist. You know what I mean? Like, I'm making words up. That thing's going to be a minute. I have to redo it all over again. It's literally how it works. So another thing that you've done a lot of is you like you mentioned there with the social media is you sometimes just can things off, right? I actually tagged you on a tweet the other day where someone said, should I stop having coffee or something? And I said, well, Spooner's tried this and said it's a terrible idea. So no, don't. So what things have you sacked off in your life, and how would you rate them from impact 1 to 3?
It's nice that you've given me a 1 to 3 scale, because I think it's only really 3 things, okay, and they are alcohol, caffeine, and social media. I've had at least a 1 month break from all of those. Caffeine is ridiculous now. Sorry, alcohol. Couldn't think of the word there. It's been so long. Alcohol is ridiculous now. It's like fucking getting on for 4 years. Caffeine, I did 28 days in February. I picked February specifically because it was the shortest month. Genius idea. And social media was 31 days. Quitting alcohol, man, I could talk about this for 4 hours, but it was just such a big thing, because not only is it something that, for me, in my personal experience, I would say that most people's use of alcohol is completely fine, but for me, it was wasting time, it was wasting money, it was stealing my weekends, it was stealing my clarity of thought, and so on. And so when I quit that back on the 1st of January 2018, I never intended to go for more than 30 days, but the benefits just kind of compounded, so it stuck. That was like a huge catalyst for positive change, because when you have more time, more money, more focus, all of these things, you create this really fertile ground to just kind of try shit out. And that's where all of this came from, truthfully. So that would definitely be up there in the number one spot. Everybody should do at least 100 days sober at some point in their life. I'm actually thinking of doing a course. I fucking hate people who make courses, because people make courses on the dumbest shit and they just put like a 9.7 at the end of the price and think it will bang. But I'm genuinely thinking of making a course. I might even do it for free. I don't know. But just like talking about the structure to put in place to give yourself the best chance possible of having 100 days without alcohol, and then do some fucking tequila shots on day 101. You don't need to be a purist like me, because I'm not saying stop drinking forever. I'm just saying give it a go once in a while. And it's kind of that philosophy that's extended into these other weird experiments that I do with my life, because like caffeine, terrible idea. That's going in number 3 spot, awful idea. Like I just felt dreadful because the benefits of caffeine are so high, and if used correctly, the downsides are so low that I've just never cut out again. But how long do you go if you're a coffee drinker without drinking coffee? From age like what, 14 until you're 82 and die, how long will we go in this current world without checking social media? Probably no more than like an hour. How long will you go not knowing how much sleep you're getting? Right, I track all my sleep. How long will you go without drinking? All of these things. And it's for the same reason that 1 month I'm going to try veganism. That will be a struggle, but I'm just going to try it, because we live our lives in this kind of tiny little box of like, this is how it's been. Maybe you inherited certain ideas from your parents and then some from your school, and your teacher said something and you saw a tweet, and you kind of bundle yourself together with this set of correct assumptions, but those assumptions are never tested. Maybe your life will be better without social media, but you're not going to know if you don't try. Maybe your life will be dreadful without caffeine, but you're not going to know unless you try like I did. And so they're the 3 I've done so far. It would definitely be alcohol, most impactful, dropping social media, a close second, and then caffeine, dreadful idea. But yeah, I intend to do more, just because not all of them will stick. Most of them won't stick, frankly, but it's nice to just know what lives on the other side, because most of us will never find out.
I quit drinking from hearing how great it was from you, and I did it for 1.5 years, and it was groundbreaking, literally groundbreaking. Like I said to someone the other day, if I ever start having severe anxiety, my business is going under, depression, or just feel shit in general, the first thing I am doing is stopping alcohol. Like I almost feel like it's like, rule number 1 is quit drinking. Rule number 2 is do exercise. I'm pretty sure, and obviously eat well is obviously always there. I'm pretty sure those areas, if you have those 3 things lined up in your life, I would guess 90% of things will be okay.
There's a book by Johan Hari. I keep dropping books in this, don't I? I'm so predictable. There's a book by Johan Hari called Lost Connections, and I haven't read it in a couple of years, so I might fluff more broadly what it's about, but essentially it is about the 7 non-medical or like non-chemical brain-related causes of mental health issues. The majority of them, i.e. 7 of the 8, aren't, oh, there's a chemical imbalance in your brain, take these pills and you'll be fine. It's more like, you don't feel connected to the people around you, you don't have a sense of meaning, you're doing this, you're not doing that right. I think that there is, and look, I am in no way positioned to speak about the rights and wrongs of mental health, because frankly, I'm not qualified, but through personal experience, I've kind of felt a bit down at times. I've kind of felt a bit anxious at times. most, not all, again, important distinction, but most of how we feel 8 times out of 10 is within our control. And if we look to our lifestyles, like what you just said, the answers are right in front of us.
They did a study, didn't they, about legalizing marijuana, for example, in America. And, you know, I don't want to get onto the debate of where we should or shouldn't legalize marijuana in the UK. But they did a study in America that said, what happens if we gave everyone the ability to smoke marijuana in the UK? And in America, they found that 52% of people who smoked marijuana, you know, relaxingly every day or whatever, they basically had anxiety and depression within the next 12 to 24 months. So, like, I mean, that doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the connection between mental health issues and marijuana smoking is definitely there. Now, you could argue, I told my friend this stat, who's a massive, like, you know, marijuana fan. He said, well, yeah, Pete, because a lot of people who smoke marijuana are using it to tail they're trying to reduce anxiety and reduce their depression. I said, well, no, these people went in without it. So I think everything is connected. And of course, depending on the mindset you're coming from, you'll come up with a different angle. You'll say, oh, no, I think this will solve it. No, I think this will solve it, because of basically who we are. But that's, yeah. But alcohol for me was groundbreaking. The only reason I started drinking again is because when Boris said we're in lockdown, I was like, do you know what, mate? I've not had a bottle of red wine in a year and a half, and I could do with one right now. But the thing is, like, the thing I learned is there's so many good, alternatives. Like, the difference between having a pint of Heineken and a pint of 0% Heineken is nothing. Like, there's no difference. Like, 0% draft Heineken is fantastic. The difference between a 0% Copperberg and Copperberg, nothing. Now, if we go back to when Beck's Blue was on the offer, Beck's Blue is the worst 0% drink I've ever had in my life. If that's your alternative, I used to walk into, like, you know, places and be like, what you got 0%? They're like, Beck's Blue. I'm like, I'd rather have water.
You know, funny story about Beck's Blue, such a fucking tangent, in no way related, but I back when I did drink, I once, on a student night out with people I hardly knew in Sheffield, went into a corner shop and accidentally bought Beck's Blue. And ironically, that's probably the most drunk I've ever been, because then I was like, oh man, I have no drink. So I was having, like, a bit of vodka from this guy and a bit of gin from this guy, and man, that was a messy night.
But the only thing that you couldn't really get good one was, like, red wine. You couldn't really, there's no real good red wine alternative. So I was like, I'm gonna get a bottle of red wine. Boris had locked down the country. And I've just kind of been drinking since then, not kind of crazily, but yeah, I can see myself canning it again soon, just because why not? And it's such a life hack.
There's such an interesting product, which I haven't yet ordered. I'm probably going to order it literally as soon as we're done with this podcast, by a guy called Professor David Nutt. He is the guy who, he was like a medical advisor to the government years back. And he was fired for saying something like ecstasy is no more dangerous than riding a horse. Like, he's really out there when it comes to, like, good and bad of drugs and effects and so on. He is working on a brand called Sentia, S-E-N-T-I-A, Sentia, I guess. And the concept there, it's in production, so it's real. This isn't conceptual, is that they have created a drink which has all of the like neurological benefits of drinking, i.e. it makes you feel like a sense of belonging, a sense of community, a sense of connection, without the like psychological and physical downsides. So there's no harm to your internal organs, there's no hangover, there's no anxiety. And honestly, if that catches on, which, let's be honest, it probably won't, because the lobbies of the alcohol industry will probably keep it from ever catching on, but I think that would just be such a game changer. Because the objection I get from people 9 times out of 10 when I say I don't drink is, I could never do that. And I say, why not? And they say, oh, because I just need a drink to have a good time. And it's not my place to say that they don't. Maybe they do. I certainly did. But if there was a drink that gave you all of those benefits, but didn't ruin the other, like, 3 or 4 things that it has the potential to, that would just change the game.
Yeah. I mean, I genuinely don't need it at all. I didn't need it from day one. I think it's a confidence thing, right? I think it's a confidence thing of, oh, I can't stand on the dance floor and dance next to everyone who's drunk because I'm not drunk. Well, yeah, you can, mate. Like, just embrace the process right now. And I had, like, a switch, and it sounds really weird, where I could basically flick a switch in my head and pretend I was drunk. Like, you feel like you're drunk, but you're not drunk. I don't know if you do that. Is that a real thing? You're nodding. I don't know.
So interestingly, right there, the nights out I've done since I haven't drank, I have felt just as drunk in what I think you're describing, the same way, which leads me to believe, entirely anecdotally, that lots of what people feel when they're drunk in a club is less to do with what's in their cup and more to do with the fact that they're surrounded by 300 people who are having an incredible time. And so it's that energy, not to sound all zen, but, like, just to tangible sense of energy bouncing off everyone. I'm the same. I can cut the worst shapes and like sing along to H in a club and have a great time, and I'm entirely sober, but nobody can see it.
Yeah, I think the problem that the alcohol-free lifestyle gang have is that they come across really forceful. Like Dom from Social Chain, or wherever he is now, he's very, very much in your face. Like, the UK has a drinking problem, and it's a problem. You have to go to zero. No, you don't. You can just take your drinking habit from four to zero to one. You can just tone it back. You can just not drink every weekend, but drink every other weekend. Like, there's ways around it. But that's the problem with, it's like the veganism thing, right? There's like the veganism gang out there being like running around trying to like, you know, free cows. Like, it's just bad for, it's just, no one wants to be one of those, right? It's like everything. So I think they just need a bit more of a moderate stance. Let me know when you do the veganism thing. I'll do it alongside you. We'll roll with it together. I do believe that a full vegan diet is better than I do believe that. It's just that I like having a steak every now and again. But I'm inclined to try it. Like, I ate a lot of veggie stuff. I think corn is like banging. Like, Linda McCartney sausages are an absolute thing. Like, there's a few things, like bacon's terrible, but the corn mince, I believe, is better than beef mince.
There's a brand called This.
The alternatives are amazing.
I haven't tried it personally, but there's a brand called This, THIS, I think they're in Tesco and Sainsbury's maybe. Apparently their vegan stuff is like so close to identical taste and texture wise that you can't tell. I've always said, and you know, maybe as vegan food becomes better, I may just one day make the plunge, but I've always said that if ever I were to think too closely about what's on my plate or what I'm eating, I would be like the most hardline vegan, just because I'm a bit of a softie. Do you know what I mean? I'd be like, oh, that, what happened to a shit? Like Richard, my business partner, one of his friends that he grew up with is a farmer. And when he tells me like what happens to the animals to get onto the plate, I'm like, stop fucking talking or else I'll never eat meat again. So I'm just kind of like, ignorance is bliss in this situation. But maybe I'll do it for 30 days and think actually that wasn't so bad. I'll stick at it. Who knows?
I was speaking to Tim Lovejoy the other day, and he mentioned that he interviewed someone regarding food manufacturing and the food industry, etc. And the guy he interviewed said the problem with the meat industry is that it's a fundamental backbone of the whole economy. And if you had two people turn vegan tomorrow, the global economy would absolutely fall by the wayside, because it's basically built on us eating meat. So it almost needs to be a gradual process of weaning everyone off it. But I think that will happen. I genuinely think, you know, that vegan and vegetarianism will be a thing. It's just that, I mean, look, me being direct, we're becoming more soppy and more left-wing as a society. And as you become more soppy and left-wing as a society, you remove the hard line. I like having steak with a fucking beer. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, that dweens away. So we will naturally become more vegetarian and vegan. Anyway, I don't know how long we've been, but I know it's longer than a normal episode. So before we wrap up, Spooner, give the listeners one bit of amazing advice and then plug an episode of your podcast.
So the bit of advice I give to everyone constantly, and you know this because I've probably shouted it at you 12 times, is just read the book The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And the reason I always say that is because it was my kind of gateway drug into this world of understanding how progress actually works. And I've literally emailed them once and been like, can I get an affiliate link? Because I've sold so many fucking books for that guy. Unfortunately, there was a long story, but I think like the publisher isn't in touch with the author and all this stuff. But essentially, that book is about how the concept of compounding interest from finance can be transferred over into habits, and the idea that being just 1% better at anything you pick every day for a year leaves you 37.7 times better by the time the year is out. So much so that I'm actually literally thinking of getting the tattoo of that chart on my arm, just to remind me to keep fucking plugging away, because if ever there was an important concept to understand in life, I think it is that. So go read that book, and Peter's, because his book is a banger as well. Great foreword too. And yeah, look, if you want to find me, search Life and Lessons on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I did an episode of Peter a few weeks back. It's a good one. He is on fire on it. Or just Spooner Sean, SPOONERSEAN, in all sorts of places. Who knows what you'll find.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and I'll speak to you all next week.